Welcome to another Booch News podcast with Ian Griffin.
So I'm on the phone today with Eli Kea, who's the founder of Urban Farm Fermentary, located on the east coast of the U.S. in Portland, Maine, which he started back in 2010, but has decided to move on. So, Eli, good to talk with you this morning.
Oh, thank you, Ian. I appreciate the call. And, started the UFF in 2010, primarily to explore fermentation of locally sourced sugars using seasonal flavors as, using fermentation as a platform to express seasonal flavors. And so that was kind of where I got going with it. I was originally a beekeeper who started a mead company back in 2007 and got that going and ran into some challenges with that and ended up closing or, moving away from that and then decided to just take it full bore fermentation. Always had it, kind of had an interest in exploring the medicinal side of alcohol production, which is, technically illegal in the U.S., but historically, a lot of the fermented beveages were originally, for lack of a better word, like potions. and so kombucha, which is a known medicinal beverage, or at least that's the way people kind of look at it, and it's fermented, really fit in well with the UFF model I was developing.
Yeah, and I saw it's interesting you mentioned being a beekeeper because your website lists kombucha, obviously, as well as beer, mead, and jun. So you kept sweetening with honey as part of your process, and also it says you use locally foraged and harvested ingredients, which I presume is where you get other medicinal ingredients. Is that right?
Exactly. It started with mead for me. When that sort of finished, I was always planning on continuing to do mead. I actually started the UFF. My first products were hard cider. There were no cider companies in Maine at the time. And so it was a natural transition to get that agricultural product, apple juice, and ferment it out. And then the next product I came out with was kombucha. And, I found a woman who was, well, let me actually back it up a little bit. So technically the UFF, Urban Farm Fermentary, the parent company was called Tangible Alchemy, and it was a winery. I was making cider, was going to make mead, knew I wanted to make kombucha, knew that I wanted to make beers eventually, grew it, and I didn't even know about June at the time. Was here in Maine when the sort of great kombucha purge happened in the U.S. in 2010. I don't know if you remember that. So that actually happened. I was leasing space to a couple of guys who were trying to start a kombucha company in my warehouse, and they went to the state of Maine. They said, "Hey, like, we want to make kombucha. It's fermented," and the state was like, "Well, we don't know what that is." They literally went to Whole Foods, pulled samples from everything that was available, GTs, Catalyst, there was a couple from Colorado or whatever, and they were all averaging about 2% alcohol. Mm-hmm. And so Maine was like, "You guys can't sell this." And they told Whole Foods pulled it out of the Maine stores and then pulled it nationally, and then that kind of triggered the sort of the great pullout of kombucha in 2010.
That's interesting. It actually
that literally started in my space.
Wow.
So I'm watching that happen, and I had my wine license in place already, and so I knew that kombucha was something that I wanted to have as part of the fermentary concept, and so when I saw them having their problems, I just went to the TTB and I created three formulas for what do they call it? They called it an other than standard tea wine.
Okay.
And so I got a kombucha culture from a woman who was actually growing cultures for other commercial entities. She happened to be here in Maine, and basically that company that tried to launch failed, and so then I told them, I said, well, you guys are not going to open, so I'm just letting you know I have these approved formulas. I'm going to start making kombucha along the cider with the mead and the beers and everything else that the UFF is designed to make. So that was kind of the beginning of it. So I believe UFF was the first winery in the U.S. to actually get a kombucha as a true kombucha with alcohol, you know, so not a hard kombucha, just a real kombucha, unfiltered. And, you know, we weren't stripping anything out. We were just simply making pure kombucha.
And is that what you've been selling over the years? That you've stayed at that 2%?
Between 1% and 1.5%. That's all I ever really made. I wasn't trying to make hard booch. I wasn't trying to strip out alcohol and adulterate raw kombucha. We were just simply making our base kombucha, which that culture, as you know, with kombucha, you are always harvesting the daughter and then re-inoculating the next batch with that SCOBY, whatever the strongest one is. And so over the last 13, 14 years, it's just been a constant, selection of the best batches every time we do a batch to create the next batch.
Yeah. Yeah, and also on your website, I saw there's a lot on your Instagram that you don't just make the kombucha and put it in bottles and ship it out the door, but you have a tasting room, a tap room, I guess, it says it's a hub for community engagement, and you've got you have an art gallery, musical workshops. So that was that the main focus of distribution? Did it happen through the facility on Anderson Street in Portland, or did you also have distribution outside of, you know, around the state or to other states?
Yeah, well, originally, tasting rooms weren't even allowed. They didn't have anything like that here in Portland in 2010. It took about 3 or 4 years before they started recognizing it. So the neighborhood I'm in is industrial. You're not actually allowed to have a bar or anything like that. And so for the most part, it was I was self-distributing it around the state of Maine. So I would primarily be selling cider because nobody wanted alcoholic kombucha. Everyone, you know, the consumer didn't really understand that real kombucha has a little bit of alcohol in it. So people were, you know, were like, well, why are you guys putting alcohol in it? I'm like, well, we're not. That's just, it's a fermented beverage, you know. The stores would be like, well, all the health food stores wanted the kombucha because it was real, but they didn't have alcohol licenses. So it was very difficult to sell for the first, I'd say, 3 years. I was essentially forcing people to take our kombucha, not because it wasn't delicious, because it was, and it was pure, and it was fantastic. It's, I would say, some of the best kombucha that's ever been produced in the country, to be honest. And I've tried a lot out there. And so it was just that the sale of it, because people didn't understand that it was a real kombucha has alcohol in it, you know, and not like the hard booch that's sort of a trend now, but like we're talking real kombucha, you know, like, mm-hmm. Homebrew, but on a larger scale, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so it became, that low alcohol platform for all of these flavors. And the lovely thing about kombucha is it really takes flavor well. So if you add blueberries to it, you're going to get those blueberries. If you add ginger to it, you're going to get the ginger, you know. Other fermented beverages are maybe a bit more challenging. Cider requires a lot more flavor for it to really work. So I liked that, but it was hard. It was super hard. People didn't understand. The market didn't understand. They didn't want the product, even though it was delicious. The retailers and that sort of thing. I sort of forced them to take it because they wanted my cider. We kept kind of like grinding away like that. And after the third year, I got a distributor for the state of Maine and a distributor for Boston. And so those guys started to take our kombuchas, and we were starting to pick up some traction then. People were recognizing that it was like, you know, next level, like high tier kombucha flavor wise and effectiveness, you know. And so we really started to get some speed there. And then from there, over the next 4 or 5 years, I basically got distribution down to about D.C. I mean, strong in New York, over to Vermont and throughout the rest of New England, and then, you know, kind of skipped over some of the mid-Atlantic states and got down to D.C. And started pushing it that way.
Yeah, so it sounds like you built a thriving business. Let's get to the cut to the chase. So now it's 14 years after your founding. Have you decided to close up and move on? What's the reasons behind that people could understand?
Yeah, I mean, that is a social situation. That has nothing to do with the product. It does have something to do a little bit with the packaging material, I think. You know, I was committed to glass because I believe in the higher quality of a glass container as far as a vessel. I also know that kombucha as a living beverage develops, if it's properly made, will produce some CO2 post-package. And I, you know, I've had way too many experiences with kombucha cans erupting and exploding in my face, not mine, but other companies that I tried. And so I stuck to glass all the way to the end. And unfortunately, you know, the market had shifted pretty heavily towards cans. And so I wasn't really interested in adulterating the kombucha by putting it in cans, and I don't really trust it anyway. So, you know, the sales started to slow down, and then we had some issues here in Portland that just made it so that things were going a little bit slower. And then, of course, COVID kind of like really I lost, you know, 80% of my distribution out of Maine pretty much overnight, it felt like, which was kind of hard, you know.
Yeah.
Distribution was probably half the business.
How are you wrapping it up? Did you look for other buyers, or are you just selling off your equipment and locking the door behind you? How's that process working for you?
Yeah, I am. Basically just shutting it down. I looked at some buyers for a little while. You know, to move, you know, the whole fermentary concept, essentially the Portland, Maine facility was a prototype to prove its effectiveness as a multi-fermentation platform. The idea was to franchise this nationally and internationally because the idea of local fermentation and seasonal flavors applies anywhere. That can go anywhere in the world. It'll taste like home everywhere. That's how it was designed. And I had a handful of franchisees lined up for right before COVID, and then, you know, they all kind of evaporated when the world shut down. And so kind of lost some steam on that, and then just kind of started to lose interest in it, to be honest.
Okay. So it's not that you rang up massive debts and you just couldn't continue as a business, or that kombucha is not any – nobody's buying. It's not that nobody's buying kombucha anymore. It's just, or consuming it. It's just, you feel like it's time to move on. What then, looking back over the time you've done this and you built the business from scratch in Maine and extended it all the way down the East Coast, what were some of the main lessons you'd like, if you had to talk to somebody who's thinking of getting into this business and doesn't know what's ahead of them? What were some of the things you did right, things you didn't? Which you've done differently?
I think that, had I chosen to kind of do what most other companies seem to be doing, which is sort of adulterate their product so that they could sell it to 18-year-olds, so they could sell it to kids and stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, my goal was to produce an authentic and real kombucha. And unfortunately, commercially, that just proved to be a bit challenging. You know, I was never chasing the trends of hard booch or soda booch or any of that stuff. And, you know, so the whims of man were kind of moving in and out. So they'd be like, oh, well, some places would be like, well, how come there's alcohol in your kombucha? I'm like, well, explain to them why. And then other places would be like, how come there's not more alcohol in your kombucha? You know? And it just, it just kind of wasn't really what I was trying to do. I just wanted to make real products, which I was able to do. Everyone who was interested in the product line really wanted to turn it into something that was not real and not true, just chasing trends. And so I figured that was not really what I wanted to have happen with it. So,
right. But in terms of your business career, or if your lifestyle as a kombucha producer, is this like and putting aside the fact that maybe the market is a tough one if you stick with the 100% authentic unpasteurized booch, but is this a good lifestyle? Have you enjoyed the last period of time, or is it exhausting? Is it all consuming? Did you have what was your work life balance like? That's kind of what I'm interested in
Yeah. I mean, I would say that it's fairly all-consuming. As you know, kombucha requires a decent amount of hands-on constantly. You know, you can't really let it hang for too long because it's either too young or it's too old. You know what I mean? Like, there's a sweet spot where it really hits. And so for consistency's sake, you need to be able to always be working it. That in some ways that's nice because, you know, you don't have to do huge batches and you're always keeping the machine running. But it does require a lot of, it's pretty intense labor wise. And then also the packaging, you know, sticking with glass was, challenging. Glass got very expensive in the last like 5 years. And, you know, everything's just gotten more expensive. And so it's tough because we were not only that, but the alcohol taxes are significantly higher as well. As a winery, the taxes were like $1.80 a gallon, you know, and so that's a lot. We did switch it over to beer about 4 or 5 years ago once I got my brewery license in place. And so the taxes were better. But yeah, it was challenging to like deal with that and then also have to deal with cider and also deal with beer and deal with meat. It was just a lot of stuff, and they all required different temperatures and they all required different handlings and all that sort of thing. So it was a lot. And I think that was ultimately the downfall of it.
But when you said a few minutes ago you plan to franchise it, I mean, I don't know how franchising, I mean, obviously – McDonald's are franchised and other carpet cleaning companies franchise. You must have had a franchise like to attract people. What were you able to present it as a profitable business, the fermentary, comprehensive fermenting of all these beverages? Was that present? Did people sort of buy, if COVID hadn't hit, would you think that people would have been able to buy into this as a something they could have made a living at?
I think so. Absolutely. You know, I think that it became challenging here in Maine, but I do believe that this could have worked in a lot of places. And I still do believe that it could. I just don't know that I have the energy for it anymore.
Yeah. We skipped over it, but, you know, I am interested to know, you didn't just have you said you're in an industrial area, but tell me more about your art gallery, music, workshop. It looks like you had a whole bunch of different activities going on in the space, in the tasting room. Did that really take off in the community?
Oh, it was amazing for a long time. So half of the business was through distribution, and then ultimately once the tasting room really started to expand, you know, I started in a small space, and then moved to a slightly bigger space, and then ended up taking over like a 4,000 square foot garage just for the tasting room. And it was It was pretty amazing. We would do flights and fill growlers, and you know, we had 8 draft lines dedicated to kombucha of the 24 draft lines that were in the facility. So it was a major part of the tasting room experience, and also just a fun thing in that people who don't necessarily drink but still want to go out with friends and have a drink, they loved coming to a show and being able to have a glass of kombucha or June. And hang out with their friends who are drinking ciders or beers or meads or whatever. So that was really nice for a long time.
Yeah, that's great. Well, it's been great hearing your story, and I wish you luck in the next chapter of your life there as you move forward.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Booch News. For more about kombucha, please visit boochnews.com.